going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices and give you a 5-year price guarantee on talk, text, and data. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy. And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
We get the best start to the day because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
Hey, welcome back to the Mark Cox Morning Show on a Friday. We got lots of good stuff still to go this morning, including our big Queen of Hearts drawing to benefit Guns and Hoses. We'll have that for you here coming up in the next segment, because that is absolutely something we're thrilled to be part of down here. You know, we love supporting our first responders, and we try to do that. This is something that's going to be going on all year, and we are the exclusive partner, which is fantastic. Exclusive radio partner, I should say. So we're thrilled that we can do that. So welcome back. We're going to get to all that for you coming up in just a few minutes. But right now, I want to introduce my guest. He is the Republican senator in Missouri from District 15, David Gregory, and great to get him back on the phone. Senator, thank you for giving us a few minutes this morning.
Thanks for having me.
We're down to the wire, my friend. What are we going to get done in the Missouri legislature this year?
That's exactly right. So for most of the folks listening, I know they know this, but our session is part-time. So we're January to May 17th. And if we don't get it done by May 17th, we got to start back over next year. And so that puts us just 3 weeks out from getting these things done. But do know, 3 weeks does sound like we're down to the wire. It really does. But if you look at the history of passing bills, the vast majority of them get passed in the last 2 weeks, even last week, as we rush to the finish line. So I'm not worried. Nonetheless, we are super focused because we've got some big issues we've got to get across the finish line.
Yeah, we do. Now, we've already had some filibustering going on with the Democrats, right?
Oh, yeah. There's been quite a few filibusters. I feel like there's been a filibuster almost every week. This is my first year in the Senate. But nonetheless, it's okay. That's part of the system that that we designed. But here's the deal. We're going to beat it. We have some strong plans. Some of them are still confidential. We've got some very hopeful and strong plans to beat this and get the key issues, right? The key issues across the finish line. We've got to get fixed Amendment 3. We've got that. And then, of course, we've got this minimum wage debacle that we've got to fix as well.
So specifically on the minimum wage, I mean, I know the issue has been here that it wouldn't stop the minimum wage from going up, but it would affect the cost of living adjustments each year, correct?
Oh, yeah. And not only that, the other biggest crushing blow to our small businesses is that there's a required paid time off. Mm-hmm. So right now, you get 1 hour for every 32 hours work. You've got to give someone, even a small business, you got to pay your employees to take time off. That's crippling, even if they're part-time in some situations. So it's very harmful, and we've got to fix it.
You know, I've heard the argument from people, even when we've been talking to Illinois lawmakers, about, you know, why do these lawmakers wait until the very end of a session to try to get all these big bills passed? Why not try to tackle these right from the starting gate? How would you respond to that? Give us some insight.
Yeah, you know, it depends. I know I haven't been privy to the leadership discussions, but it seems like what they're trying to do is in good faith work with the Democrats, in good faith work with other Republicans, and make sure everyone's heard, give it plenty of time to be debated, plenty of time to be kicked around, negotiated, so all parties, small businesses, everyone involved can be heard. And so instead of rushing through a solution immediately, we're doing that. But now as we get near the end, we may not have a choice. We're gonna have to pick it up and run with it.
Pick it up and run with it. Like, how about exercising the PQ? I mean, I know that they tend to do that more over on the House side, but the Senate has seemed really reluctant in past sessions to go with the nuclear option. And if we need to get Amendment 3 passed, or we need to revise these overtime time off restrictions that were passed, why not just drop the PQ and get it over with? Because you have the supermajority.
Yeah, so like you said, the PQ is possible, but it is the nuclear option. And the reason it's referred to that is because then it's over. After that, it's all chaos. So the PQ is, in my opinion, something that should be very limited and as a last resort. And that's what I'm hoping leadership's looking to do. That's certainly what I would hope to be doing. We will use it when necessary, but we hope to use it only when absolutely necessary after all other options have been exhausted.
Yeah, but I mean, you're never going to get the Democrats to agree to another version of Amendment 3, are you?
No, and so I don't know what the plan is, but I'm game. You know, rarely do I ever want to use the PQ, but in times like that, I'm willing to.
Yeah, and just so people know that it all it does is it requires a certain number of you to sign a piece of paper that refers back to the previous question, and that cuts off debate. Am I right?
That's exactly right. All it does is end debate and takes it to a vote, whereas in a Senate filibuster, debate has never ended and can theoretically go until the end of session. If the Democrats organize well, they could debate all the way to the finish line and kill everything, not just A3 and minimum wage, but everything else.
One of the stories I've been reporting on this morning was this fiery debate that was sparked over this bill in Missouri that would raise the marriage age from 16 to 18. Now, I didn't think it was that big of a deal, but I guess some people are nervous, some conservative lawmakers are nervous that would increase the number of abortions. Where do you stand on that? And do you think it will pass?
Yeah, see, that's a tough one. It hasn't hit the floor for debate. It wasn't heard in any of the committees I sit on. So I have not been privy to a lot of the arguments for and against, but I do think that that's a key concern. I mean, I don't have anything, I don't think there's anything wrong organically with making the legal age 18, but at the same time, I don't want to promote abortion. So the answer is, I don't know. I don't have a position on that yet, but I will be well studied, and I'll certainly be intently listening during debate to make my decision.
Yeah. Senator David Gregory, our guest. Now, you had a couple of bills that you and I talked about early in the session, one including on illegal immigration and how to deal with illegal aliens in the state. Has that gone anywhere?
No, I mean, I've gotten the commitment from the committee that they are a yes vote. It will pass out. However, given that it is a hot topic, my strategy is to make sure I see a successful pathway before I make people take votes like that. And so I'm still looking to see, can it get through the House of Representatives? It seems like it doesn't have a strong appetite from our current speaker, which is unfortunate, but nonetheless, it's okay. I'm working with them. I think they just don't understand. As soon as anyone understands what the bill actually does, they're very supportive. So, you know, we're looking for a pathway before I push those types of tough votes onto my caucus.
Yeah. You know, my biggest disappointment, I'd have to say, from this session is simply the fact that there was a lot of talk about maybe either bringing up IP reform again and or reducing the state income tax, if not eliminating it at some point. Neither one of those is going to make it to the end of session this year, right?
Yeah, I mean, and I'd be careful with IP reform. Now we're pushing it to the ballot box, and so we got to be careful how strong or how difficult we make it, especially if we go for an A3 fix.
Right.
That wouldn't be an IP, but it's similar. And so then do you bifurcate and make what the legislature puts before the people a different standard than that of the IP? I don't know. Tough call. I would say that's probably not one of the absolute top priorities, but I mean, look, as soon as we get this Amendment 3 thing fixed, IT reform has got to get done. It is a key issue for us protecting ourselves.
Yeah, we're an easy mark for out-of-state interest, for sure. Senator exactly. Gregory, thank you for your time this morning.
Yes, thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, we'll talk again soon. Senator David Gregory there from District 15. So, yeah, I once again, super majorities in other states tend to rule with an iron fist, and they push through their priorities. And in Missouri, we wait till the last week, and then the Democrats threatened to filibuster us, and we tend not to be as effective as we could be. I'd PQ every darn thing they brought to me, and I would pass it all.
So Florida has a supermajority for conservatives, right?
I believe so.
I feel like whenever I think of the ruling with an iron fist, that's the state that comes to mind. Just how maybe it's just Ron DeSantis is who I'm thinking of, and how effective he's been as governor.
I agree, and I wasn't even thinking of it in terms of Republican or Democrat. In states where the Democrats have a supermajority, like in Illinois, they do whatever the hell they want.
True.
They ban mascots that have been around for 100 years. They don't care. They do what their priority list, what their voters sent them there to do. So I'm just pointed in general here at the legislature, but I just see this attempt to be nice can only go too far if you're going to really get anything accomplished in some cases, for sure. All right, coming up, we'll get to our Queen of Hearts drawing. We're fortunate enough to be the radio partner for our friends at Guns and Hoses, and they do this every week. We will we'll get to all that for you coming up next on the Mark Cox Morning Show.
Guns and Hoses Queen of Hearts, benefiting the St. Louis Backstoppers.
Yeah, thrilled to be the radio partner, thrilled to get to make this announcement each week. And, of course, 2 weeks ago we had a winner, like, early on. This is the first year they've done the Queen of Hearts drawing for Guns N' Hoses. Of course, all the money's going to go to Backstoppers that they raised. They're doing it all year long. Here's how it works. You buy a card out of the board, right? You can get five tickets for $25. You buy five, you get one free. So you have five different chances to win, and every week they turn over a card. And if that's your card, then you win a dollar prize, right? You win a dollar amount. And then if you get the Queen of Hearts, you win half of the jackpot. So we had a winner 2 weeks ago. They had to reset the whole thing, and now the jackpot's back up to $1,500 and growing. And all you have to do to get your tickets is go to GoRaiseDough.com. I don't know why I can't get that right. GoRaiseDough.com, and you'll see it on there, and you can buy your tickets or just go to the Guns N' Hoses website. The winner this week is ticket number 297-815-313. The card is a two of spades in slot number 54. Two of spades, slot 54, 297-815-313. So congratulations. They'll win a cash prize for that. And I think a $25 cash prize. And you have a chance to continue winning. So go to their website and get your winning tickets now. And best of luck to you. You can always go to Guns and Hoses, STLGunsAndHoses.com. And they have all the information on there, STLGunsAndHoses.com. So congratulations. All right. So, Kim, you and I were talking earlier about why in the world there are so many biased judges and what we could do about it. And I think I'm going to try to get an interview on this on Monday. But several people, including my friend Attorney Beavis Shock, pointed out that this thing took a turn. Our judiciary in this country took a partisan turn during the Barack Obama administration when Harry Reid ran the Senate. And it took Beavis and another person emailed me as well to remind me of this, but it used to be that you needed a supermajority almost of senators to approve a judicial nominee. And therefore, you ended up with people that were less partisan because you had to get Democrats and Republicans to buy in to approve a judicial nominee. The Obama administration got frustrated that they couldn't get enough of their liberal judges approved, and they accused the Republicans of intentionally slowing down the process. So they changed the rules. They reduced it to a 51 vote. All you need is a 50 plus one in order to get a federal judge approved. So whoever the party was in the majority in the Senate would get whatever judges they wanted.
Who made that change? Are you saying
Harry Reid made that change to the Senate rules?
So if Harry Reid could make the change, why couldn't they make the change back?
Well, they could, but at the time, Mitch McConnell warned him, you're going to regret this because when we take over, we're going to have the same power. So during Obama's last couple of years, they loaded up the judiciary with liberal judges. Republicans took over. They loaded up the judiciary with more conservative judges because all they needed, they just picked their judges, and all they needed was 51 votes to get them on the bench. And then Biden became president. They spent 4 years loading the judiciary with their liberal progressive judges, and now the Republicans are back in charge of the Senate, and they're going to be doing the same thing. So the cat is out of the box. The only way they could ever put this back together, I think, to get less partisanship in these judge positions, and because many of these are lifetime appointments, the damage has probably been done. But people do retire each year. You would have to switch it back to a super majority of people in order to get, like, I think it was like 67 votes that they had to get before in order to be elected to the bench, to be put on the bench.
Maybe that's not the solution to go back to that, but there has to be something done. The damage is done. I feel like a sneeze is about to come on, if I'm being honest right now.
All right.
Okay, I think it passed. Sometimes when you feel like a sneeze is coming on, you just want to actually sneeze. You know, it's disappointing when you lose it.
I do.
Anyway, beside the point, so I don't know what the solution is, but I mean, even though the damage has been done, we can still do something to try to correct it moving forward, because this is going to continue happening. And yes, right now it would work to our benefit with Trump being in office with any federal judges that, you know, he appoints. But I'm just getting sick and tired of just so much bias, and it's so political.
And I am biased, and I'm going to admit my bias, but my belief is that Republicans are much more likely to appoint people who are constitutionalists and people who interpret laws against the constitutionality of them. And progressives are more likely to look at the social impact of a law instead of how it stacks up against the competition. We've seen that problem on the Supreme Court, certainly, and now we're seeing it throughout these liberal appellate courts throughout the country, where they just approved some ban on AR-15s in like Maryland. And that's going to go to the Supreme Court, and hopefully to God they overturn it. My goodness. Coming up, we'll talk more about how President Trump's energy policies are working.
Response to President Trump's actions, just his messaging on marketplaces. What you're going to see is tariffs on U.S. exports come down across the world. President Trump's message has been free and fair trade, reciprocal trade. I'm talking to foreign leaders all the time, and they want two key things. They want to buy more American products. I'm talking to them mostly about energy, and they want to invest more dollars in the United States.
Yeah, that's the Energy Secretary Chris Wright talking about the president's tariff policy. And of course, the other big issue is gas prices, energy prices coming down. The president promised he made a statement in the Oval Office, I believe, even this week, that he is bringing energy prices down, the cost of oil per barrel. The question is, are most people seeing that translation at the pump? It's a good question. Lucky enough to have Kelly Saberi with us from the Fox Business Network this morning. Kelly, good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, there's a lot of look at. I know they're taking a close look at that. This the Trump energy policy and how they can spur American development and drill, baby, drill. Right.
Right. That's correct.
So what are they doing now about that? Are they making the permitting easier? How are they getting to that job done?
So what one of the executive orders does from this week is basically fast tracks the process that it would take to get a project like this off the ground. So there's two different ways you can look at it. You would either have a environmental assessment, which typically takes a year to put together. Right now, the Interior Department says this will be boiled down to 2 weeks. And then for a full environmental impact statement, which would take 2 years to process, they're saying it'll be shortened down to about 28 days.
Wow. I mean, that's, you know, I've noticed the drop in oil prices for sure. I've not seen it as much at the pump. I mean, I drive a diesel, and gas here in the St. Louis area is, you know, $3.29 a gallon, I think, at the gas station closest to my house. Like, I've gotten it for as low as $3 a gallon. That's not the sharp decline, I guess, I expected.
Right. Well, so something to note is that the two of the EOs that we're talking about, these executive orders from this week, have to do really with mining. So what it is going to affect more than just what we see at the pump is what materials are we able to get from our resources here in the U.S. That other countries have been able to get more, I guess, at the ready. It's much easier. Countries like China produce, you know, more than half of some of the world's entire supply of some of these critical minerals. And the critical minerals go into a lot of important products. And that includes products that we use, like, in the defense industry. Also, you know, the kind of minerals that go into making steel. We were with the Interior Secretary a couple of weeks ago down in Alabama looking at one of those coal mines and what the coal mine needs to really expand the work that they do there. And, you know, that's why the Interior Secretary was visiting. They're trying to make it easier for companies like this to expand on federal land and, you know, give U.S. companies the resources that they need to bring manufacturing back here.
Kelly, I remember when Biden halted the work on the Keystone pipeline and how big of a deal that was. And then Trump comes back out and had said, OK, you know, we're moving forward with this, and had promised easy approvals to get construction restarted. Have you heard any update on that, on when that could actually start? Because to my knowledge, nothing has been done just yet.
Right. So it's interesting that you bring that up, because the company that started that project in the U.S. has said they're abandoning it and they're not going back, because it took so much work to get all of that done up to the point that it got to. They said, you know, we're not going to go back down that path. And the company has actually spun off and is doing something else now. So the work that it requires to get a project like that up and running is, you know, it's not a simple process. You have to talk to multiple jurisdictions and multiple states. So I'm not sure that that project is going to take off the way that the president has been tweeting about. But I think the idea is that we should bring more pipelines back, more natural gas, more resources like that. But specifically for the Keystone pipeline, we might not see a resurgence of it exactly.
Wow. Yeah, I hadn't heard that. I had not heard that information before. That's interesting. Kelly Saberi with us from Fox Business. You know, part of this was trying to boost deep sea mining. You mentioned these minerals that we're so reliant on other countries for. Is that something that had been like prohibited by the Biden administration? Were they trying to just shut it down, or do we know?
So a lot of environmental activists have been concerned about what deep sea mining does to our waters, right? But this is something, again, that a lot of other countries, especially China, are doing pretty regularly and, you know, using it to their advantage. So they have minerals like nickel, copper, other things that we consider rare earth elements that are really deep in the seabed of the ocean. So it's possible with a different executive order that came out yesterday that we could see the U.S. jumping back into this. Another executive order basically wanted to fast track this process as well. We'll have to see what comes of this. One of the experts that I spoke to said that while it's a great idea to fast track, there's two issues that do come into play. And I know this wasn't the question that you asked, but just something for the listeners to remember. We're going to need a lot of hands and a lot of minds to approve the request for projects. But if we have less workers, maybe perhaps as a result of the Department of Government Efficiency, DOGE, as we call it, we might not be able to see that fast track process really put into play if we don't have as many workers able to sift through all of the materials. Now, the other thing is there's already laws in place that protect the environment. So we are I mean, I can say with pretty much 99% certainty that try to stop some of these projects.
Yeah, very good. Kelly, listen, we appreciate you giving us a few minutes this morning. Thank you.
Thank you.
You bet. Kelly Saberi with the Fox Business Network. I apologize that we got her clip there close to the end of what she was saying. But, you know, here's the thing. The Democrat Biden administration used the power of the government to try to punish coal companies, coal-burning power plants. I read the story that you could almost read the exasperation in the headline of the Post-Dispatch recently when they reported that the Sioux and Labadie coal-burning power plants were getting some sort of a two-year reprieve from these ridiculous scrubbing requirements that were being put on them by the EPA in an attempt to shut them down, no doubt. What they wanted to do was make it so expensive that Ameren and these companies would have to move away from coal because they couldn't afford to keep adding all of the equipment on to clean what was coming out of there. And it's already cleaner than 95% of the other coal plants in the entire world, but that didn't matter to these radical extremists. It didn't matter. They don't care if you're paying $12 a gallon. Barack Obama admitted that in 2007, that his goal was for you to pay so much for gasoline that you didn't use as much of it, and you intentionally went and tried to buy an EV, right? I'm sure he didn't intend at that point for his own voters to be out keying other people's EVs, but that's kind of where we are these days. What the Democrats had was an anti-energy policy. They did not want you to do anything with fossil fuels at all. And, you know, this morning I've got a soundbite here from Batya Unger Sargon, who is really getting to just absolutely crushing it these days, I would have to say, over at CNN. And she's pointing out how people really need to look at the bigger picture here, what Donald Trump is doing, that nobody else has looked at. China's potentially our number one, certainly economic enemy in the world. They are. Enemy is the only word I can think to describe it. They're not just a competitor. They want to beat us. So they are our enemy in many ways, right? They're our single biggest challenge in the world right now, I think, is China. What he's doing here is trying to bring things back to the United States so that we've become so dependent on them for so many key things. She describes it better than I do. Listen.
I think probably we could all agree that our relationship with China was deeply problematic, that when we relied on China for the very medications we needed to fight the pandemic that came from China, unsustainable.
And we'll talk
on China to build the ships we would need if, God forbid, we ever got into war with them. Unsustainable. That the trade relationships we have with the rest of the world, unsustainable. The tariffs are the reason that he is struggling in the polls, but he knew that this was going to be a period that is going to be very painful, and he still had the guts to do it. This is something that he deserves a lot of credit for.
I also think
he knew that it was going to hurt, and he did it anyway.
I just want to.
He said the word tariffs.
I just want to. Never said there would be some pain.
Of course he did.
Sweetheart, did you hear that, by the way?
Oh, they all lost their minds.
That was pretty demeaning.
It was demeaning.
I know.
Just like when Randy Weingarten said it to Martha McCallum the other day. Of course it's demeaning. Mm-hmm. And they want to dismiss her, but she's absolutely right. Could you imagine a scenario where we're having to rely on the steel we need for our warships from China, who, if they attack Taiwan, we will be in a war with. Mm-hmm. If we're not producing that stuff domestically, we're defeating ourselves. If we're not producing vaccines domestically and there's a bigger war in the world, then we can no longer get those. We're just hurting ourselves. And Donald Trump realizes this and is acting on it in a way that no president in my lifetime has.
He doesn't care as much about his polling because like you just heard her say, he is going down in that because people are freaking out about these tariffs, but he knows that these are for the good of the country and it's worth it for him, even if he might be disliked in the short term.
Yep, it's very true. All right, run over a little bit in that segment. We're going to get to a quick break and we'll be right back.
The Mark Cox Morning Show
on 97.1 FM Talk. Catch anything you missed today by getting the show podcast at 971talk.com.
Mm-hmm. I had to basically trick myself out of it, and it started with not having anything to wear.
Yeah, poor Michelle Obama. Earlier this week, we played a soundbite from her with this podcast interview she had done. And I don't know how I missed this portion of it, but she was complaining, you know, just about how rough it is to, you know, to not be heard as a black woman. And I'm sure that that's difficult if you're standing on the veranda of your beach house that is secluded with a gate and nobody could hear you if you yelled because you're standing on your deck and there's nobody anywhere close. But maybe the staff at one of their many multi-million dollar homes could hear Michelle's voice.
I thought that might be it. I think that is the issue.
Yeah, I think that's probably it.
I saw something about how she is she feels like the practice of saying no is more important right now for her than doing the quote unquote right thing.
It's how she's defending not going to the funeral of Jimmy Carter
or the Trump inauguration.
Or the Trump inauguration because she didn't have anything to wear. But that was intentional, according to Michelle Obama. Listen.
My decision to skip the inauguration, you know, what people don't realize, or my decision to make choices at the beginning of this year that suited me were met with such ridicule and criticism, like people couldn't believe that I was saying no for any other reason, that they had to assume that my marriage was falling apart,
right.
Mm-hmm. You know? Mm-hmm. It's like, mm-hmm. while I'm here really trying to own my life and intentionally practice making the choice that was right for me, and it took everything in my power to not do the thing that was right or that was perceived as right. But
so she admits that the right thing to do would have been to go to Jimmy Carter's funeral, mm-hmm. and to go to the inauguration, but she was just in a mood and decided to live her best life and lay on the beach in Hawaii.
Well, don't we all feel like that sometimes? We're just not in the mood to do things. But
most of us aren't. Most of us aren't the former president of the former first lady. Pretty much everybody else showed up, right?
Well, yeah.
Except her.
Barack was there.
From those elected positions, if they were physically capable of being there, Barbara Bush, George Bush was there.
Hillary Clinton went to the inauguration. She had to have seriously had someone like dragging her in because must have been so painful for her.
It's got to be. Imagine that. I mean, it must be much harder for Hillary, you know, who bumped her head up against that glass ceiling and got soundly rejected by the voters of the United States to show up in public like that, mm-hmm. particularly, you know, sitting next to Bill while he's staring at all the beautiful women in the room. That's got to be just awful for her, but she suffered through it. But Michelle Obama's like, she's better than all that. She's going to lay on the beach and shame on anybody for criticizing her for it. She had to know she was going to take grief for that.
That's the problem with this whole self-care era that we're in, where people are just under this idea, this whole notion of like, well, if it doesn't help me and doesn't bring me joy, then do away with it.
Well,
guess what? Life is hard. Sometimes life sucks. And you know what? You got to do things that are hard. You got to do things you don't want to do. Put on your big boy pants. Put on your big girl pants and go do it like an adult. You're the former first lady. I don't care if you didn't have an outfit to wear. I feel frumpy every day of my life half the time. I don't care. Like, I don't want to hear the excuses. Figure out something to wear. You're not the Grinch. Go to the dang funeral. At least go to the funeral.
She should have at least gone to the inauguration or admit why you weren't going. You didn't go because you hate Donald Trump. And if it had been Kamala Harris, God forbid, being sworn in that day, she would have been in the front row with her best, you know, $25,000 dress on.
She said she didn't have anything nice to wear.
She said she intentionally didn't pack anything nice to wear so that she couldn't collapse and go at the last minute.
I'm thinking of the Grinch. If I can't find anything nice to wear, then I'm not going.
But what will I wear? All right. We'll get to Brian Kilmeade here in a couple of minutes. The Annie Fry Show a little later, noon to 3, and the Reardon Show this afternoon capping things off. Have a great Friday. We'll see you back Monday morning.